CliffCentral.com.
I love that 70s guitar sound. Isn't that beautiful, huh?
Very nice. Mm.
Stevie at the piano, so young. So young. So I had VH1 on the other day. I was just flipping through the chat. I never watch TV, so it's always surprising to me when I see anything. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Because I really don't watch live TV anymore. I watched a bit of the tennis, like I said, and there's some documentaries occasionally that I'll pay attention to. But I watched VH1, and I saw 3 or 4 music videos in a row. And I just could not believe how badly people dressed in the 70s and 80s. I mean, listen, the 80s, Cyndi Lauper, I saw Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Mm-hmm. Yes, sis, but I mean, the outfits were unreal. Hmm. Neon pink, neon green, neon yellow.
Yeah, neon everything.
Big permed hair, shoulder pads that make you look like you're 8 times wider than you are tall.
And I imagine those would have been the times where purple eyeshadow and blue blush
everything together
made sense.
Everything together. Dark blue jacket, pink pants, yellow top. I mean, like the most neon, outrageous mix of colors you've ever seen. The 80s were terrible in terms
of
fashion.
Nothing for me says 80s more than Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Oh, big time.
Oh.
Right. And then one other music video came up. I think it was Starship. Nothing's gonna stop us now.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, these music videos, I know at the time they were considered to be statements of art. They were beautiful. People would be blown away by music videos like Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer. You know, it was like there was a lot of stop motion stuff there that was state of the art, and music videos like Michael Jackson's music videos, where everybody spoke about them like they were a great painting in the Louvre.
Mm.
But if you look at them now, because obviously, you know, we've got CGI and we've got the most incredible HD technology. I mean, everything looks like it was filmed on a cell phone. Quality was bad.
Mm.
Everything was hazy and soft focus. And there was Olivia Newton-John's Physical was one of these. What a disturbing music video.
Is that Let's Get Physical, Physical. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so there's that one. the Starship, the hairstyles.
Yes.
The way, like, men had these Jerry Curl type. The guy, white guys, I'm saying. Not even. This guy had this frizzy, like, bob hairstyle. It looked ridiculous.
Mm.
And if you think in those days that everybody else was like, yeah, that's the cool hairstyle to have.
But some things were so bizarre. Like the other day I watched, it was a Lionel Richie music video.
he looked great hair, after the Commodores.
His hair is a topic of discussion.
And a little moustache.
Yes. Mm. But then there was this trend where he buttoned the top button of his shirt and the second and left the rest unbuttoned. And he was dancing around, doing like these pirouette-type moves. And I'm thinking, as much as it was a different era,
What was your thinking then,
what
Lionel?
What was the thinking behind that? You know, like, oh, I know how to look cool. Button the top two buttons and leave
the
rest of my shit.
When a trend grips you and gets a hold of you, it's very difficult to be logical about it, especially when you've been gripped by it. I mean, you know, Lionel Richie could turn it around on you, Sia, and say, well, what is it with your generation wearing clothes with holes in them? Are you insane?
Yeah, he could.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, for you, his leaving his shirt unbuttoned from the second button down made zero sense, whereas somebody could look at today's fashion and say, this makes zero sense to me.
Well, I wondered the other day, because I was putting on a pair of jeans, and I thought, I wonder if people in 10 years' time will laugh at the skinny jeans phenomenon. Whether they'll look at that and go, you do realize how stupid and ridiculous you looked.
Is it just me, though? It almost seems as though back in the 70s, people had less weight issues. Or maybe it's just because, you know, because we were seeing music videos, you always saw the skinny, good-looking people. all the guys had tight pants. I keep thinking of the Bee Gees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, they needed those tight pants to help reach the high notes.
Then there were the bell bottoms as well.
Listen, like, that was a thing, huh?
Nobody seemed to be
overweight. Go and look at your parents' wedding photos.
Nobody seemed to be overweight back in that era because they were all wearing these tight pants.
Yeah, except at the bottom where they flared. Bell bottoms.
Yes.
That's ridiculous. All right.
They dealt with bell bottoms. We're dealing with bell pottinger. You know? Circle of life.
All right, a couple of messages, and then we'll get to some news. I need some of those billions from Trump, says Treshka. My car was stolen on Friday at my office in Blaubach Strand. I still managed to have a super weekend.
Oh, no.
Have a good week, guys. Well, at least you're positive.
Yeah.
Oof. I hope it was insured. Listening to you guys, what a cuck song, says Tato. Hey. Oh.
Sorry.
I know this is not the way it works, but 100 million for 200 stores is like half a bar per store, cheapest chips. Good deal for Joffy, says Carl in Josie Yobby. He's not buying the actual stores. He's just buying the franchise. Each store belongs to each owner, I would assume. And a lot of people talking about Makosi Koza, who hopefully will be coming in to see us a little bit later on. Someone tweeted out, still ill-disciplined, still can't be relied upon as a team member, still bad for team sport. Shit ain't singles tennis, it's 15 men rugby, said Vuyani Ngalwana. And then that's obviously referring to Makosi Koza. And then that was retweeted by the Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula, which bothers me because that means he tacitly approves of her being intimidated.
Jeez.
How is that the right way to behave? And then this one comes through from Villamine. I sent this message on Thursday, but the people who received it never passed it on to your show. So here it goes again. I'm a podcast downloader from day one of Cliff Central. I'm a listener from the great Kai, that's Trans Kai. I download because here we don't wake up before 8, before 9 a.m. Unless
there's
good surf, and I don't surf. Hole in the wall. Coffee Bay. Put it on that bucket list we discussed last week or the week before. I hope Ben and his drone got some real footage to show to my bale. A magical part of our great country. I love you all, and sometimes I'm not happy when it's Saturday because there's no podcast to download. So there's Villamine from the Trans Guy.
Can you imagine not waking up before 9?
Oh, that would be nice.
Whoa.
Oh, I'd be such a happy person.
Oh, I can only dream.
That sounds awesome. I can't even wrap my head around that.
It seems
a
insane.
Lot of people are very jealous of you, Villamine. Enjoy your fantastic life in the Trans Sky. You lucky woman. By the way, Ben will be back on Wednesday, in case you're wondering.
Mabali, you were mentioning this. The idea of just being able to wake up naturally.
Mm. When your body says, okay, let's go.
And you actually go, I think I've had enough sleep.
Yeah.
That's great.
Instead of at 5 in the morning.
All right.
The struggle of trying to, for me, I always go through the struggle of trying to find my phone because I'm like to slip underneath
the pillow.
You drop it
and then it falls and you like grab it and you're half asleep and half awake and you feel like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. All right, let's get into some news. Let's find out what we need to know about the world as it is right now.
Okay, well, let's begin with the SABC and Saudi Mutsweneng. And apparently,
halala Limpopo, halala, halala Gauteng, halala, halala KwaZulu Natal, halala, halala Western Cape, halala.
Mhm. Where the SABC are now apparently considering laying criminal charges against Saudi Mutsweneng. Ooh.
Good.
The SABC's interim board is on a mission to claw back millions of rands that were paid to the disgraced former COO. It is also thinking of laying criminal charges against the fired boss. The board was appointed by President Jacob Zuma in March, and it plans to sue Mutsweneng for the return of 11.4 million rand in bonuses that he received last year. The bonus was linked to a deal that granted MultiChoice access to their public broadcaster's archives without the authorization of the then SABC board.
Yes, see, that guy just, he ran it like a personal kingdom.
He really did.
Oh, someone asked me about the SABC the other day, and I said to them, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I haven't been involved there in ages. But the whole Cloudy thing started after we left. So that means it happened in the last 3 years that he really took control.
every now and again you see actors taking to social media to talk about how they haven't been paid for shows that they do on the SABC. We heard stories about how after the Metro FM Awards, artists did not receive monies that were promised to them for winning awards.
No, it's disgraceful.
You hear stories about how production companies are not able to pay the staff that they employ because they never receive the money that's owed to them by the broadcaster.
Right.
It really is a mess. So this MultiChoice deal that Motsoeneng did all by himself with no authorization, mm-hmm. in its entirety, apparently it's worth 533 million rand. And it gives MultiChoice control of the SABC's archives for 5 years. Now, Motsoeneng's bonus in this deal mm-hmm. is worth 33 million rand to be paid over the next 3 years. The 11.4 million rand was the first portion of the three-part payment which he received in August last year. And according to the SABC's interim chairman, Kanyisile Kweyama, she said, "We have handed over Mr. Motsoeneng's matter to the special investigating unit to fast-track the investigation so that we can lay criminal charges and recover that money. If the end of the investigation is that there are recoveries to be made, then that is what they will expect." So Motsoeneng could very well be facing a lawsuit and then also a pay-back-the-money kind of situation.
Wow. Well, I think they should go after him. I mean, why the hell not? I think it would be appropriate. The guy, he basically took huge amounts of money out of that corporation when they couldn't afford it. He made decisions that he didn't have board approval for. He sold the archives. He mismanaged the place into the ground, even though you can't necessarily go after him for that. I think he should personally and financially suffer for what he's done to our national asset. You know, the problem is, like, if these people who have stolen from us, and by us I mean the state, the government, the people of South Africa, these people who've stolen from us, I see Dudumieni's finally gone from SAA. Did you see that over the weekend?
I did not, actually, Gareth.
It's quite a big story. But, again, there's someone who's run the place into the ground. If they have to pay personally, then it teaches everyone else a lesson that corruption does not pay, that defrauding the taxpayer does not pay, that there is a price for this kind of thing. Then we'll have some serious action. The moment someone has to pay out of their own pocket, you watch how things change.
Mm-hmm.
So I reckon you've got to be able to go after these people personally and take their house and take their car and take their assets. Get the sheriff to attach all their stuff. Everything. They must be left sitting on the side of the street with half a cucumber. That's all they got left.
Oh.
That's all.
Sorry, I'm just in my mind. I've got this cucumber slice in my mouth. It's very bland. Like there's nothing exciting about
half a cucumber.
A cucumber. Absolutely
not
nothing.
Not even a full one. A half one. So it's gonna go all wet at the end.
And then when you've left it in the fridge for too long,
it gets all gnarled.
Yeah.
Get all
squishy.
Wrinkled.
Yeah.
Oh.
Starts going black and, you know,
oh.
moldy
oh.
and watery.
Sure. Well, speaking of SAA, the Deputy Finance Minister, Sifiso Buthelezi, has apparently been given 5 days to hand over the SAA forensic reports. This is after it was revealed in the media yesterday that SAA apparently renewed 4.5 billion rand in tenders without following proper procedure.
And, really?
Yeah. And apparently this is only the tip of the iceberg, according to the DA, who are now going after the Deputy Finance Minister to say, hey, deliver on your word. You said you would hand over these forensic reports. We're giving you 5 days to do so. So they're giving Mr. Buthelezi until the close of business this coming Friday, the 21st of July, to make good on his commitment. The DA had submitted a Promotion of Access to Information Act to the National Treasury, but it was rejected. They then wrote to both the Finance Minister and his Deputy Minister to no avail.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the DA, they said, clearly there is much to hide within SAA. In May this year, the Deputy Finance Minister committed to provide copies to the Portfolio Committee on Finance, yet he has not been a man of his word. And as such, the DA are now giving him until this coming Friday to do so. Failing which, I don't know what the repercussions the Deputy Finance Minister will face. He hasn't handed over these reports for a while now, so I don't know what this 5-day deadline is going to do.
Everybody seems to be taking a long time to do everything right now. Huh? Everybody's stuck. Let me share my sneeze with you first
thing
on a Monday.
Thank you very
we
much.
Hope that these deadlines will actually prompt people to, you know, work.
No, people don't. People don't want
to
work.
The music.
A government has basically just stopped working. There's nothing going on at the moment. They're all sitting there looking for what's going to happen next. They need leadership from the top. The top is not giving them any leadership. It's a disaster. So you have situations where whole departments in government are just frozen. They're in paralysis. It's very bad. Very, very bad.
Okay.
Okay. All right, what else?
Well, as we talk about billions and billions and
billions, please, let's not go there
in
again.
General.
Right.
Hey, look who's dabbling into the whole finance world, and more than that, virtual currencies. It's our good friends who live in Oranje.
Oranje?
Yes.
What are they up to?
Yes.
So, you know, Oranje actually has its own currency called the Ora. Now, you know, because they are so, you know, all about breaking boundaries, they are now introducing the e-aura. So they are getting into the world of virtual currencies, and they're trying to compete with the likes of Bitcoin. So when you are in Oranje next time, just know that you can now dabble freely using the aura.
Well, wouldn't it be embarrassing if wouldn't it be the most embarrassing thing if this little shitty town of Oranje ends up being a more successful place and has a better currency than we do? Wouldn't that be embarrassing? Wouldn't our government then have to go, oh my God, we've really screwed up?
Apparently, there are no more than 1,400 people that live in Oranje.
And I was surprised to find out that actually only 97%, I say only, but 97% are white people. So there's still 3% of people who we don't know.
There's some very brave black people.
Are they black? Are they colored? Are they Indian?
That's what I want to know now. That is what I absolutely want to know.
Maybe they're black and they vote ANC. Just very brave.
Residents
in Oranje say they still maintain that the town is not racist, arguing rather that Oranje is the best way of preserving Afrikaner culture and language, and it offers a safe sanctuary from crime-ridden neighborhoods. And you go in there, and there's a vetting and interviewing process if you want to be one of the citizens. And I guess if you passed all of that, then you can gladly move into Oranje.
Gareth, don't you want to like go there and ask for
before
for
the question
it would
is
be an experiment for the show. You go in there and you say you know you really want to be a part of their community.
Yeah,
so
then I'm going
to
take you,
and then we can find out their vetting process.
I'm going to say that you're my wife.
Yes,
and that'll really mess up their day. Listen,
I
just want to point out, like, I think we're trying to understand how a place like Oranje can exist. For many people, it's complicated and it seems anachronistic. In other words, it seems like a throwback to a previous time.
Yeah.
But actually, I wouldn't be surprised if these guys are the e-currencies and they're developing all kinds of little things that are small advancements for a tiny neighborhood like that that's really isolated itself from the rest of South Africa. But I wouldn't necessarily say that these people are dinosaurs or that they're backwards. We've got to be careful because somewhere they might actually be better than us. They might actually be doing things better than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is true, that should be something we should be worried about. Sitting outside of Oranje, trying to be superior, thinking that we've got the moral high ground. They're a bunch of old school racists. They say they're not. They say they're just trying to preserve Afrikaans culture. They seem to be doing a few things that we're not. They seem to be managing and governing their little town in some ways better than we're managing and governing our whole country.
Mm.
So let's not cast aspersions until we know for sure that we are actually superior.
So, strictly speaking, the Ora is not a full currency, but it serves as a token of sorts within the town, and it was introduced back in 2004 to promote local spending. So that's another thing that they're focusing on, keeping everything local, with
that's
users
clever.
Enjoying discounts when they use the local coupons. And so Oranje doesn't exactly insist on payments in the Ora, but the town profits from every sale of its currency by holding the deposited rands in an interest interest-bearing account. So far, okay, the ORA or e-ORA is not officially sanctioned by the South African Reserve Bank, but sure, residents can currently exchange rands for physical ORA at the town's self-styled central bank at a rate of like one to one.
Do they have notes? I mean, does it have favurit on the...
It's a voucher, I understand it.
It's a voucher.
There are pictures here. Yeah, just look.
You got a picture of it?
Yeah.
Let me see what that looks like.
It's a tiny little picture.
Got Jan van Riebeek on? No. Who's on there?
It's just on the corner of the screen there. Yeah, ooh, it's just a little green note.
Tin ora.
Yeah.
And it's got a woman carrying a child.
Oh.
And, yeah, tin ora. Look at that, a virtual currency. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good for those guys. I do think Mubs is right, though. It would be fascinating to actually see what goes on there, because we talk about it like it's a different universe, but it's just down the road here. It's in the middle of the central sort of region of South Africa. It's kind of half straddling the Free State, or
they're in the Northern Cape.
Northern Cape.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it would be fascinating just to, you know, get a, like, be a fly on the wall, as the saying goes, just to find out, because we don't know a lot about these people. We don't know.
And I think it would be so, like Madiba went there. Remember, he had tea with Betsy Verwoerd.
Verwoerd's widow.
I mean, if Madiba could go there, then I suppose we would be silly to just write them off and ignore them.
No, I genuinely would love to go in there and just observe.
Yeah, let's not. In other words, let's reserve judgment until we know for sure that these people are, you know, they're not necessarily the backward dinosaurs that we think they are. Maybe they're just a bunch of people who believe in self-preservation or their community preservation. And, you know, there's some things about that that are kind of silly, and there are probably some things about that that are not so bad. Let's just see what happens. All right. I see Rick and Morty is coming back, which I'm very excited about. It's only the greatest show ever.
I thought this show has been back for a couple of weeks now. I'm so confused.
I saw a trailer for it, and I saw that on Facebook. You know, Facebook is now everything. It's your news feed. It's your friends. It's your birthday reminders. It's everything. Somehow there are people who they just exist. They don't have Facebook, and somehow they manage to live, Mubs. I don't understand.
Yeah, well.
How do they do it?
Word on the street, man. Word travels.
Yeah, I feel like if I had to lose Facebook, and believe me, I've tried, I wouldn't know what was going on in the world. I wouldn't know. Like, I get updates on my friends who live in other countries and other parts of the world. And even though you have WhatsApp groups and all the rest of it, you get to see the pictures of their kids and their birthday celebrations and, you know, you kind of feel like you're still involved in their life, even if you haven't seen them for months. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do we have real connections with people these days, or is it all imagined?
I mean, how real of a connection could you have with somebody who lives in Canada? Facebook allows you to still be able to keep up with them via that medium or that platform.
That's how I feel about it. I think it's as good a connection as you're ever going to have.
Yeah.
And it feels pretty real. I mean, again, I connected with a friend of mine not so long ago, 2 weeks ago now. And he was out here for a family matter, and I hadn't seen him for about 2 years. We just picked up where we left off, and I don't think that would be possible if it weren't for the updates on Facebook, and I could see how his kids are, and I could see how his wife is. I can see what's going on, you know? Sort of, it feels almost like you're getting those newsletters that our parents used to write to all of their friends overseas. Anyway, what else is in the news?
Okay, let's head over to Qatar, shall we?
Qatar, shame. They've had a terrible time. Their neighbors are hating
shame,
on them.
It's yeah.
Not working out very well.
Qatar is like the little child on the school playground that everybody has decided is no longer cool enough to hang out with them.
Oh, they're bullying
them. So they've been outcast.
No. They're bullying the hell out of this poor child.
So the six Arab countries who last month cut ties with Qatar are reported to have written a letter to FIFA, to the governing body of FIFA, to demand that Qatar be stripped of hosting the 2022 World Cup because they consider the Gulf state to be a base of terrorism.
Huh.
According to the Swiss website,
it's so ironic. I mean, isn't it the greatest irony of all that a country like Saudi Arabia should be pointing fingers at places like Qatar?
Mm.
I mean, Qatar. Can't even pronounce it properly.
people who live in glass houses.
Right. How dare you? Like, you're better. Come on.
According to the Swiss website, The Local, they have reported that Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Mauritania, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Egypt have collectively written to FIFA asking it to remove Qatar as hosts under Article 85 of the FIFA Code, which does allow for such action in the case of emergency. But here's the catch, though. Reuters are the one who initially, broke the story. They have not seen a copy of this letter. And FIFA have said that their president, Gianni Infantino, has not received any such document. So all these six nations are saying, we wrote this letter,
nobody's seen it.
Nobody has seen it. FIFA are saying, we don't know of its existence. We don't know anything about it. And according to a FIFA spokesperson, they've said, FIFA is in regular contact with the Qatar 2022 Local Organizing Committee, as well as the Supreme Committee for Delivery and Legacy Handling Matters. We know nothing of this letter.
It sounds to me like all these other six Arab nations who are trying to whitewash themselves in virtue by pointing out how evil and backward Qatar is. It seems to me that they're really just trying to distract everybody. Like, don't look at us. We're not as bad as them.
Yeah.
It really is that playground thing that you were talking about. Doesn't seem right.
Now, people in the United States who represent and advise the Saudi government have also not yet responded to Reuters' request for confirmation or comment on this letter. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Bahrain and Egypt, all of them, they cut diplomatic ties with Qatar back in June. And they've also shut off, any transport going in and out of the nation, accusing it of supporting terrorism and also supporting Iran.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a Shia Sunni thing as well.
Yes, it's very political.
I gotta say, like, I think this is a storm in a teacup from the point of view of kind of these Arab nations trying to say that they're more responsible for terrorism than any of them. They all foment this kind of nonsense inside their own borders. And to hold yourself up, listen, don't get me wrong, I'm no fan of Qatar. I mean, these are the people who've been building those stadiums with essentially slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about this since they got the nod to host the World Cup. Remember? Ben brings it up often.
Yeah, I remember Ben telling us that, as soon as people are given the job of building, they then have their passports taken away from them so that they're stuck in that situation.
Pakistani and Indian slave labor.
Essentially.
Yeah, and other parts of the world that also contribute to this. You know that there is a slave trade going on in that part of the world that nobody ever talks about. Black people are taken there as slaves from North Africa. You know about this? There was a documentary someone sent me. I haven't watched it yet, but I will, and then we can talk about it extensively.
What is it called?
I don't know. I have to look it up. But someone sent me a documentary that details the kind of the underground slave trade that's been going on. And apparently hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, who are working as slaves in the Arab world, a lot of them from Africa. Nobody seems to be talking about this. We thought slavery had ended in the 1800s. Huh. Turns out no. There's still a lot of it going on. And I'm not talking about the sex slave trade. That's a whole different thing.
Mm.
I'm talking about slavery. Like, you have people working in your house and in your garden and on your estate as slaves. Like, they don't work for money. They work for food and accommodation. And they don't work because they want to. They work because they were brought there when they were young, and that's what they were told they have to do for their lives.
Jeepers.
Can you imagine? So I'm going to look into this because I haven't watched it yet, but once I have, we'll have lots to talk about.
Mm.
It's a very strange part of the world. There's some very old rules that still seem somehow to apply there.
Yeah, so really this is just a case of, we're all bad, but Qatar, as far as we are concerned, are worse than the rest of us.
Yeah.
It would seem.
Somebody says here on the messages, I haven't had Facebook for more than 2 years now. Twitter is great for news. Look, I agree to a degree, but I think Facebook is just more interesting. You can have little networks and message boards and group. I just find like Facebook has, Also, people talk about their feelings, they have arguments. Mm-hmm. Twitter just seems to be a little bit too finite with 140 characters.
But as well, you know, Facebook still has this thing of it's your personal circle.
Yeah. Unless, it feels like it, even though you know your page
or whatever the case is. But Twitter, it's mostly a lot of people you don't know who follow you and. It seems, bigger and more exposed. Whereas you can create your own little tiny world on Facebook.
Migs says, Gareth, would you rather drive or fly to your destination, homework, etc., or teleport via a device to your selected destination? The side effect is going to be teleporting ages your body by 83 hours every time you do it.
Oh, no.
Oh, I don't know if I could handle that cost. But if you think about it, so you lose 83 hours of age, but you gain not having to sit in traffic. That's a tough one.
Mix is very peculiar with his questions.
Yeah, I
wonder where he even got 83 hours specifically.
Very odd. Okay, I've got to play you this because this is something someone sent me over the weekend. A crowd of 65,000 people waiting for a Green Day concert to start. This is unbelievable. In London's Hyde Park on July the 1st. So Green Day are going to perform. There's a crowd of 65,000 people and they start singing Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. Gave me chills. Listen to this. Crowds are noisy. Listen to this. That's the crowd. Isn't that beautiful? Pretty impressive.
That's crazy.
Beautiful. Don't you just want to join in? What's incredible about this is to get 65,000 people to do something in perfect time is hard enough. Even hum the guitar parts.
No.
This is so good. Come on, everybody. Humming along to the guitar solo. Unreal. Here we go. Here's the real test. Okay?
All right. Yes. I was waiting for the high note.
Oh, it away, people.
No!
This has been voted the most popular song of all time. Huge number of polls, like upwards of 100 different polls that have been conducted over the last 30 years. And people just love it. Here we go. Here's your Beavis and Butthead moment. See people jumping up and down. Now that would have been amazing to be in that crowd, because the concert hasn't even started.
Wow.
Already you have the sense of camaraderie around you as 65,000 people are singing a song together, huh? I don't want to stop it. I want to hear it to the end. I hope this isn't boring for you. Cool. Unbelievable. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I think that it's moments like this that they refer to when they talk about the power of music.
Yeah. Get 65,000 people doing that all at once.
There has to be.
And they sound like a pretty in tune choir of people, let me tell you.
There has to be a very interesting story to Bohemian Rhapsody and how it was created.
Sure.
I've heard a bunch of different interpretations of how that came about, and I'm
did
not
any
sure
of them include, you know, booze or the bird, because that does not seem like a story.
I don't know which ones are true and which ones are not, but it seems to me to be a real masterpiece of musical composition.
Mm.
A lot of people saying Brian May was the guy who really wrote the track. Some people say no, Freddie came in and had a melody in his head. Roger Taylor might have come up with some really cool, you know, that dun, 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 mm-hmm. That's all drums. And I don't know. I wish, you know what we need to do? We need to get like a Queen expert in here to tell us.
Yes.
But I did see another fantastic thing that someone sent me over the weekend. I seem to have been collecting a lot of content over the weekend. But someone sent me a list of, if you could go to one concert and they give you only 8 options.
Mm.
The options were the Beatles,
mm-hmm.
Bob Marley, Jimi Hendrix, Notorious B.I.G.
Sure.
You only get to go to one, though. Elvis, Queen.
Sure, Michael was in there.
Yeah, mm. Michael Jackson. And the last one was Kurt Cobain, Nirvana. Who would you go to?
Ooh.
It's tough, right? Try and make a decision on that one. It kept me busy for an hour. I was thinking, well, I'm a huge Notorious B.I.G. fan, so that really should trump everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you throw out? Jimi Hendrix, the greatest guitar player that ever lived. Queen, Freddie Mercury with that voice. I would love to have seen him.
Mm.
Michael Jackson, I did get to see. He was on his history tour, and he was amazing. You can't compare like Michael at his prime with anyone. And then I'm thinking Elvis. I've heard legendary stories about Elvis.
You know,
it's hard to choose. There's no one you throw out immediately.
Mm.
Bob Marley. Can you imagine going to one of his shows?
Yeah. You see, he also, for me, I think, would have had that effect on a crowd where when you're in that space, you really, the music just kind of takes over you, and you all want to love each other and rub up against each other because you're probably all smoking weed to begin with, which is fun. But also because, you know, Bob Marley, through his music, he was just this, you know, this positive guy, and all he really wanted was just for mankind to
get
just
along
be
with,
better.
Right, get
just
along
be
with
better
each other.
Human beings.
But it's no. I'd actually love Bob Marley at like a party, for example, like a dinner party, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely Michael for the showmanship for me.
All right. Ooh. It's hard to choose.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
All right. We're going to get to Rich Mulholland in a moment for the reality check. Are we sorted?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Let's go straight to him. Good morning, Mr. Mulholland. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm very good. I'm having a wee laugh here.
Why?
So my son just got given the best gift ever.
What's that?
So last night, they get ready for school. He's going back from school holidays, packs his bag, make him turn off his devices early, get a nice early night.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, this morning, they'll wake up, drive to school. Jazz takes him off to school. They're sitting there waiting for everybody to arrive. They were a week early. My son just found out he had one more week of school holidays.
Oh, that's the best.
Okay, a week. He came in. He had the biggest smile on his face. He's like, "Dad, this is the best." Yeah.
How did you guys screw that up so badly?
You know what? I have no idea, but I think I'm going to do it every holiday from now on.
Yeah.
This is my top tip to make your kids appreciate something. Tell them their holiday is finished a few days early. Make them get up from school and then say to them, "No, we're giving you an extra 3 days."
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
I can only imagine what a thrill that is to know that you've got a whole extra week of holidays. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So it's probably back in bed now.
I don't.
Yeah.
don't.
When was the moment that they actually realized, oh no, hang on, we've got this wrong?
They're sitting at the school and nobody was arriving. and Jazz was like, "No, Cal, listen, this is strange." And he was like, no, I'll just go in. Oh no. We should wait and see. And yeah, nobody arrived. There was nobody there.
God, what a feeling that must be.
Mm.
All right, yeah. So Rich, first things first, how's the book doing? Because we spoke to you last about your book just the other day, and it seems to me that a lot of people really like that discussion and want more.
Yeah, I was super stoked. First of all, thank you so much to you and the team for having me on. I really appreciate it. And sure. The feedback in that's been amazing. There's been a lot of people tweeting me this week, showing me with copies of the book. And what I like is that a lot of the people that have been tweeting or Instagramming are not people I know, which I know it sounds weird, but when, as soon as you start leaving your circle, there's a chance or there's a feeling that you're making progress. So when your mom and all her friends have copies of your book, it's cool. But when people that you've not met have copies and comment on it, I think that's super rad. And then the publisher contacted me last week saying that she'd like to have a chat to me this week about the next book. So that's pretty rad.
Can I ask you the question that we've been dealing with in the last couple of minutes? If you could go to any one of these 8 shows, which one would you go to? And you can only choose one. Michael Jackson, Kurt Cobain, Notorious B.I.G., Jimi Hendrix, Elvis Presley, who are the others? Bob Marley. Who am I leaving out here? Queen.
Yes.
And the last one was
Elvis.
Michael Jackson.
So in that list, I'd go see Elvis or I mentioned the Beatles, earlier.
The Beatles, the other one. Yeah, sorry.
It'd probably be the Beatles, just so I could tell my mom about it. She told me she went to see them when she was younger, but she doesn't remember a single thing because she just screamed at them, like literally screamed and cried the whole time.
So she actually had real full-on Beatlemania.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think every kind of kid of that era did. Mm. But I'd also love to have seen the Sex Pistols as an old school kind of, or the original Ramones, just from the point of view of the kind of fathers of punk rock, and then one other one. Just when I was an ex roadie, the band that you wanted to have toured with was the Grateful Dead. That was like your rite of passage, and it was actually while I was touring that Thingma Bob died. And I realized I would never get to do what was considered the rite of passage of all roadies, is to tour with the Grateful Dead. So there was a wee regret.
Well, it's because you were a roadie that I wanted to know who you'd want to go and see. Because there's some of those iconic concerts. I heard Pink Floyd's The Wall in Berlin was just the most incredible experience ever. And I've heard some other...
I remember watching it, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard some other people saying that, you know, there are just those great iconic shows that have changed the world and that nobody wanted to leave and everybody thought when they were there that they were part of history. Anyway,
I mean, Woodstock. Oh, how amazing.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. Of course. Incredible. Except very filthy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't go to local festivals because I don't like that there's no showers.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that I would have been much into it in the 70s, but I would have regretted missing it nonetheless.
And especially with all that pubic hair. I mean, the 70s. All right, so Rich, tell us what's on your mind this Monday morning.
Geez, like, well, I'm now worried I'm coming for a bit of a downer. Maybe I should have had a plan B. But anyway, I want to talk about Nazi Germany.
Okay. Thanks, that's all right. Go on.
So, have you ever wondered how Hitler managed to indoctrinate Germany?
Yeah, well, I've watched him. I've watched his speeches. I've tried to figure it out. I've read Mein Kampf to see what it was that brought a mostly educated population of people under the spell of this horrible ideology. And I've got to be honest, I haven't cracked it. Do you know the answer?
I'm not sure if I know the answer, but I think we get some sense of it. So the first thing was obviously the fact that Germans were in a bad place because of reparations of the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
So the German people were poorer than they'd ever been before, and they needed an alternative. They needed a better system.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you need something better, something different will suffice. But the truth of the matter is how Hitler indoctrinated Germany was slowly. He did it over a long period of time. It wasn't like he came into power and 4 years later we had a different Germany.
Mm.
He started off with removing the freedom of the press. So he removed the ability for the press to speak out against them. They were given the fallacy of freedom in that they were told that they were allowed some degree of freedom, but only within a certain very constrained language set. Then what he did is he vilified the outliers in government. So people that did not suit his mindset and philosophy, he ousted and publicly vilified. And then, of course, later on, when the regime got harder, they were taken away and killed and things.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1926, he created the Hitler Youth and then the League of German Girls. And what he did is he went to boys of 10 years old and started enrolling them and offering them these leadership positions that they could take a path of leadership. By the time the 1935 had come by, 725,000 Germans had been in leadership roles, or young Germans had been in leadership roles in this movement. So these were they were speaking out against injustice and things. But of course, while in there, they were vilifying a group, in this case, obviously the Jewish people and non-Aryan Germans. And so he got in slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. And it was over the period of like 15 odd years before, obviously, the Second World War kicked off. And the reason I'm telling you this is because, and I know this is going to sound extreme, but I'm actually worried that to some degree, without the death at this stage, we're repeating this. I'm worried that we are repeating this with regards to a far left point of view, killing the way that we are allowed to speak. So I feel like I've always seen myself as, you know, a punk rocker and pretty kind of left wing and very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized today is that I'm not nearly liberal enough. Is that I'm not allowed to have an opinion on things that aren't far left enough. If I do, I get publicly vilified. The press is not allowed to say something. There was an issue a few weeks ago about who's the greatest sports person of all time or the greatest tennis player. McEnroe got into trouble in the press because he said, I think it was Serena Williams was the best female tennis player of all time, and he was given trouble because no, she's the best tennis player. And he said, but she lost to a game against a 200 seeded male player.
Mm.
And they said that doesn't matter, and I think it does matter. I think it's okay that we are different. It's just not okay that we don't have equal rights. Like, we should celebrate our differences, but we're not allowed to do that anymore. The other day you posted that trigger the vest post.
Yeah,
which got you into quite a bit of trouble. The comments were obviously more fun than the...
Well, it didn't cause any, it didn't really cause any trouble, because I think that it's widely understood that there are different kinds of feminism. The feminism of equality is something that I think most people agree has already been won as a battle. Certainly in terms of people accept that everybody should have equal rights, men and women. There are parts of the world where that doesn't happen, but those parts of the world are also considered quite uncivilized for other reasons. What this one was is it was about how humor is suddenly not acceptable or appropriate under certain conditions. And there I agree with you. There I think we've got to fight back for irony and sarcasm and for the ability to criticize ideas.
Yes, and that's the problem, is that this societal censorship that is being put on us if you have a point of view. So I posted the other day, a friend of mine put a comedian, it's a lesbian comedian, it was and funny enough, I watched it so the same way I'd watch a black comedian, white comedian, Jewish comedian, whatever kind of comedian, mm-hmm. and I just didn't think it was particularly funny and said so much. And I said, you know, yes, I didn't laugh once. I was a human being commenting on comedy with a friend of mine who I play board games with. And the comment that came back was that I was a cishet male, blah, 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 who, so, you know. And I was like, wait, hold on a second. How did this become about my sexual preference and my gender? I thought I was, I genuinely said I didn't find this funny. I didn't see the humor in it. And this is a problem for me. It's a problem that every opinion I have, even vaguely outside the prevailing point of view, is not allowed anymore. And how I know this is a bit of a problem is I find myself censoring things I'm saying. I find myself not willing to say things, and other people not willing to say things as well. So certain friends now who I know share a point of view will actually send me articles because they want to post it. But they say, listen, I really check this article out. I want to post it, but I'm afraid I'll get into trouble. And it really is something relatively innocuous. There was an example of an article I posted the other day about it was from Cosmopolitan, and it said, "Dear parents to be, stop celebrating your children's gender." Now, they didn't say stop celebrating if you're having a boy, because that would, of course, be wrong. They said stop celebrating the fact that you're having a child of any specific gender whatsoever. So don't have an it's a girl party or it's a boy party. Have a completely androgynous, gender-free party.
Yeah, but this is a good thing. This is Cosmopolitan. You'd have to have your head read if you took anything that they wrote seriously. It's basically it's a soft pink version of the Huffington Post or the Daily Vox. I mean, do me a favor.
Right. But here's the problem: is that this is changing. This language is changing the way that people think, to the point that people are afraid to speak or speak out. And my worry is we're going to get to the point where we genuinely stop saying things, that we become embarrassed to talk about our kids' gender. We become embarrassed to buy a daughter a Barbie because we're seen as bad parents. And I think this is a problem. I think we are running the risk. And I guess the reason I bring up the very extreme Nazi Germany mindset is that we are kind of heading into a science fiction future where gender roles will be will we get to the point where we're all wearing short hair, the same hairstyle and wearing the exact same clothes so that nobody has any gender differentiation whatsoever, where we're teaching our children not to speak in a certain way so people will not be able to identify what gender they have?
Yeah, like the paralysis of political correctness.
Right. And I think it's a very real problem. Not to say that and it's not, and again, I don't want people to stop having an opinion that there should be extreme left or extreme rights. I think that you should be understanding that everyone should have the right to have an opinion, even if it's contrarian to yours. But, and this is a problem that they're not.
Rich, I'm trying to understand, or I'm trying to see it for the problem that you say it is, because I feel like to a degree, we've all been censoring ourselves anyway, depending on which crowd you're in. Like if you happen to be the only guy in a group full of women, you know, you censor yourself to a degree, and vice versa. If you arrive at an event where it's your grandparents and all her friends, you're in a group of elderly people, like you censor yourself to a degree. You know, if you walk into a group of like one race group over another, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like these are things that we've been doing anyway.
Absolutely, to a degree. Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand why you feel it's now at critical point.
Well, I think it's kind of different in that we're not allowed to have a generalist point of view. So again, even this post, someone will consider this mansplaining. This is a man, a straight white male, complaining in, about the fact that he's no longer allowed his point of view. And if he gets called out for having an opinion that is not this, he's going to complain on the radio about it, is that there shouldn't be I'm totally happy with somebody disagreeing with me. I think the irony is, for me, is that a group so hell-bent on removing labels is very keen on adding them to almost every single situation. That you can be attacked for having a point of view almost all the time if it isn't far left. And I tell you where it becomes a problem. Because if you take, like, you can lose your job over having it. If you say something that is not, right, say, gender appropriate or sexual preference appropriate or far left appropriate, mm-hmm, you can lose your job. But if you say something far right or extreme, the opposite, you never could. So if you're saying something that goes against the far left, you'll lose your job. That's not politically correct, and Twitter will try you,
they'll
be fired.
They'll do what they call doxing, where they basically will put out your details, they'll say where you live, they'll harass you. This is what happened to those journalists just the other day when the Black Land BLF went and protested outside Bruce's house. This doesn't happen if you take on the opposite point of view.
No, and that's my point. And that's why I believe that there is a problem. Is it so if you had a very liberal point of view and you spoke out about, killing abortion doctors, you wouldn't even lose your job.
No.
You could actually tweet about the fact that you think that all abortion...
I got to say, like, I think that there may be a bit of a backlash happening, because if you look at, like, Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher and that kind of thing, these are people who are on the left, who are espousing mostly leftist views. And when they do things like cut off a fake Trump head, I think they've received just as much heat. I think it might be changing, Rich. I'm just throwing that in there as a cautionary.
I hope so. And I guess that's why maybe it's a point of discussion. It's something I've been pondering over the weekend. And I worry so much about censoring myself.
I would just like to say that I think that it's just as inappropriate for Kathy Griffin to be censored as it is for anyone who is on the center or right to be censored. I don't like the idea of censorship full stop.
Yeah, in fact, I completely agree with you that. And while it, to me, is a bit of an outlying case, I certainly was as frustrated about that. And again, that's, I guess, my point, is that outside complete hate speech, I kind of feel, and calling for violence, I kind of feel like almost anything should go. There should be that allowance of somebody to have a contrarian point of view to yours. But maybe I'm too caught up in one specific circle of thinking, and I could be thinking about this in too extreme a way. I guess time will tell. But I do think we should be aware of it. And I think that we should allow and support people. And also, we shouldn't get into fights with people all the time over a contrarian point of view. It's okay.
All right, Rich. Well, thanks for the call.
Rad, dude.
We'll chat to you next week.
Have a great week, and I'll chat to you guys in a week.
Great stuff. Thank you. Rich Mulholland and the reality check for Monday. It's the way to start your week. Fire you up with some food for thought. All right, when we come back, Dr. Makosi Gwaza, is she coming?
We're going to we're still like on edge about that particular because she's actually not even picking up her calls.
I hope she's not in any trouble, because we know these threats that she's been...
No, I genuinely state that with concern, because she didn't even check into her hotel last night.
Sure.
Okay. That's the blank look we all have right now.
Yeah, I hope that she's okay. Well, we've got lots of other stuff that we want to get into this morning, so there's plenty to hang around for. And if Dr. Makosi Gwaza does make it in, then we will chat to her about, obviously, all the things that are going on in her life. Mm. She's probably one of the most controversial people to the ANC, controversial to the rest of us. I think she's probably one of the few people who's speaking truth to power. But that's an opinion. So much of what we do on the show is an opinion. But with Dr. Makosi Gwaza, we just hope that none of this opinion is the kind of thing that gets her into the trouble that we've read about, where she's got threats to her life, threats to her children's life, that kind of thing. Not on at all. We'll speak to her hopefully in the next hour. All right, let's get your day off to a good start, shall we? Time for us to get moving. It's one of my favorite songs, Sheryl Crow. It makes you happy. Monday morning, cliffcentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.